Whoa, man. Well, oh, I'm on air. Well, folks, it's me, Andrew Fetter. Yep, I'm the host of When Pigs Fly, coming from right here in Las Vegas, Sin City. Or not to reiterate and sound redundant, yeah, you know, what happens here stays here and all that stupid stuff. But it does, including your money. God, I was originally going to start off getting into my initial program. And by the way, I want to first, before I get into everything, I want to thank every one of you out there in internet land who are listening right now and in the future, in future archives and etc. And I also want to thank BBS Radio for having me on there. Yeah, I was like ready to get into Let's Play the Blame Game, but a couple of things have come up that I'm definitely gotta get off my chest. I mean, it was almost like when I saw them, it was like well, a couple issues and God, where do I start? Let's see. Well, I want to. It's like, you know, when you got a ball in your rear end, you got to take it off and get rid of it somehow, that pain. So one of the issues is, of course, the thing with Paris Hilton, which, I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, talk about double standard. You know, it's absolutely horrid where if somebody goes into keeping something, if you're rich and you're famous, there's like a double standard in our justice system, which is abhorrent. And every piece of, well, that's the way it is. Well, it's supposed to be justice for all. Of course, we don't ever follow that. That's what it's supposed to be. So it sort of really bothered me when I saw how she was out released because of medical condition, and the medical condition, well, she just couldn't take it anymore. Well, there's a lot of people in there for that type of reasons and whatnot. Now, I understand releasing because it happened back in the late, in the mid-90s where before they had built the Twin Towers, for example, it got so overcrowded. What they started doing is releasing out people who had, like, whether it's contempt or like small crime. But what they do is they send them out on doing work furlough programs, cleaning streets, picking up newspaper, you know, or cleaning toilets in the sheriff facilities. Okay, I mean, if she were to be released, that's what on a you know, like a lockdown, and but she should be doing more of an extended time with a work furlough. But it to me, it's outrageous. Like I said, I don't even know where to start. It's definitely a double standard. I mean, I know the LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, have on the side of their car to protect and serve, and I don't remember what it says on Los Angeles County side of their car. But they should have the same thing, but just add on it, yes, protect and serve the rich and famous. Because that's abhorred what they just did. I mean, you know, I mean, and then what's going on? It was worse. It's like the reverse of the O.J. Simpson trial, and she's not the only one. There's a double standard. I mean, there's a trial going on. People are not even aware of probably because it hasn't really been much in the news. Is Arlen Specter, who was a very wealthy mogul in the music industry, who's up for capital punishment, and not, you know, you're always innocent before proven guilty. But under his situation, even though most people would have had to sit in jail during the course of their trial because it is a capital punishment crime alleged, he of course has been sitting out for a couple of years doing whatever. Because he has money, and that's the bottom problem, the big problem. I think that's a, and this thing extends like just as well as within our whole system. You know, our government in the United States has been set up pretty much perfect on paper. It's just that we have a lot, it's not been ascribed by, because we have a bunch of idiots who take advantage of certain situations and a lot of people who, you know, take advantage of it basically. And it becomes mainly, instead of a democracy with a republic standard where it has a representative government, we have a plutocracy where the rich have one set of rules for themselves and everybody else has another set of standards. Which is not exactly when you sing the Pledge of Allegiance and justice for all. So, now I got that thing off my chest. And hopefully things will be changed over, I heard, with a hearing. But that was just one issue. That was a minor thing. I mean, enough of Paris Hilton. The other thing that brought up to my attention was sort of like abhorrent, I feel, and it's sort of like, I don't know how to say this, but it was just mind-blowing that still that she gets covered in social rights. Is, Ann Coulter had put out a op-ed piece, and actually I read it, I saw it the other day inside here in Las Vegas, the Review Journal, which basically a Review Journal for those out there. It's basically sort of like Fox News put on paper. I mean, it's very slanted, but to still have her put her op-ed, and you read it, it was like very racist. In it, it had disclosed, it was talking about comparing how the whole Mexicans and Latinos are turning the United States into basically Tijuana. It was so racist with overtones. I mean, yes, there are different cultures who come into the country, and they may not have, ethnicity where they come from, maybe not had educated or the opportunity of literacy, or they just don't have that as the first priority. I mean, there are Asians who come to this country and quickly move forward, and other cultures, who people from other countries, don't move as fast. You know, everybody at their own pace. But what I'm reading, when I read that, it was like I could have taken out the word Latin in it, taken the word Mexican out of it, and you might as well have put in Jew, Italian, Polish, back in the early 1900s. You could have went further back in the 1850s and 1880s when the Irish were coming to the United States and put their name into it, because every group that has come here from whatever origin or whatever have always been ridiculed that they're going to lower our standards or take away from America, but that's obviously the opposite. And there's obviously Latins, has a rich culture that has brought in a positive effect. Anytime you add different cultures into it, it's almost a layered positiveness to it. And part of the Southwest has always had for hundreds of years, a Latin background to it. So to say it's turning third world is absolutely abhorrent. Yes, they're coming. A lot of Latinos are coming in, and they don't speak our language, and maybe they haven't there hasn't been strived. There's maybe a rise of illiteracy, which happens when there's such a large volume of immigrants, and especially if they come from areas that are rural or they don't have that culture initially of striding for moving up that quickly in society, maybe because of their own standards or whatever the situations are. But it may even take time. But on our liberty, on the Statue of Liberty, it says we welcome those who are poor, those who are needy, those who are sick. We don't pick and choose. I mean, we have open arms. And then yet she wears a cross, being symbolic of Jesus, of being somebody who is tolerant, who is more welcoming. It's like a total hypocrite. And when I was reading her statements, also she went into issues of comparing the Anglo-Saxon law of order of British and American around the world, and saying, you know, that look at wherever the British were, they made great strides and brought law and order in the area. And I was like, oh, dumbfounded. Like, oh, my God, well, let's start. Well, I can say the Middle East. The British controlled that and what could happen there. And I'm not going to get into the blame game because that's the same game, which I'll get into later. But it was mind-boggling, you know, to say that our own system, our order is the best order that we've pushed on other places. Sort of remind me of what's really the best order. She might as well have been saying Nazi Germany, because they had it down as far as law and order, because you just make no, everybody has to listen to you or you're, you know, caboose, you know, old Nazi Germany. I mean, she basically could have been writing a column for Goebbels, and instead of putting, you know, Latin Americans, you might as well put Jews in there, because it would have been the same ugly, racist thing of some Nazi. you know, and I'm just blown away that a paper could put her and allow her to op-ed, and advertisers could put money, you know, as bad as what they did with Imus on MSNBC, she is actually worse what she has said in her columns, and not just in this column, but any column. And anybody who even pays her for that's even more sickening, you know. And enough disclosure. That just sort of blows. And the reason why I brought that up because about this racism, because it just blows me away. It just irks me, you know, with passion. It just because I can't understand how people can sit there and judge people by all the time, consistently over their race or their color or you know where they're from or their religious or their sexual orientation or whatever. I think it's plain retarded, okay? it's stupid. You know, it's like I had at one of my coworkers who and she happens to be gay, and I was telling her the other day, I was sitting there, hey, you know, I was watching like the debates, and you know, it's real interesting watching, you know, when they talked about the gays in the military. And I asked her, well, what do you think, you know, it was really interesting watching all the Democrats say, hey, you know, they need to make a more open policy regarding the military acceptance of gays. And it was funny how all the Democrats, you know, before that, and then all the Republicans said nay. Well, it's not time to change. So bringing that up to her, you know, I was telling her that. And then it got on to, I said, you know, it'd be interesting. I have a funny feeling the way it's going that it's very possible that, you know, Hillary Clinton will be our next president. And it'd be ironic if, not so ironic, but very interesting if her co-running mate happens to be Barack Obama. I mean, that would be a first black woman, first woman president and a first black, vice president. And the thing that came, she said, I like Hillary, but the other dude. And then she used the N-word. And I was like, whoa, what was that? Yeah. And I was like, but that's, how can you say something like that? You don't even know him. You know? And she started going, oh, all them ends are like that. And I was like, I can't believe you, you know, how can you judge them? It'd be like reverse somebody judging you by your own sexual orientation. And it's just mind-boggling that how that's around stuff. I mean, with plethora in the United States still of bigotry and racism. You know, I mean, when I ask people about in the South, you know, who are from the South, why they put up a, you know, still that they, you know, they have a Confederate flag on their cars or whatever, you know, how that looks to a black person in the United States is as bad as, you know, a Jew seeing a swastika. It's the same symbol, basically, is. And they're saying, oh, no, it's for Southern heritage. What's Southern heritage? Yeah, I understand, you know, the Dixie and stuff, but that symbol is slavery. That symbol is racist. How can that be, is that your heritage you're proud of? Oh, that's not all of it. That's just, but that's what that is. Just like the German, maybe, you know, Nazism wasn't the Nazi flag, or it was not symbolic for some a German can say, well, that was for our pride of Germany, not killing 6 million Jews and 4 million others, and wiping and making and the wars that went on. That's just the innocent civilians that killed, 10 million people got killed, and then there's the amount of soldiers on both sides. And the destruction that happened in Europe and North Africa. But it's just mind-boggling that that's, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it. How can somebody and be feel that way? And it really comes down to back to in a preceding shows I've had about self-worth, you know. If you don't have, somebody doesn't have any self-worth or a lack of, they go into this situation where they're going to become very racist or anti or hateful, you know, because the only way you can hate somebody else if you have some issue about your own self that you're not happy with, underlying, you know, end up to judge somebody else like that. So to me, it's sort of mind-boggling. But I do want to get back now to my main issues of what I want to talk about, which I've already talked about a little bit. Getting back to the blame game. You know, people always blame. You know, not everybody, but a lot of people tend to have a habit of blaming other people for their own choices. You know, and it extends as far as the politics as well. I mean, you can start from right now, like the war of Iraq. The blaming. You hear, like, liberals blame the conservatives, conservatives blame the liberals. One blames Clinton's administration, you know, from the neocon Republicans, and then you have the liberal Democrats blaming the Bushes. It's always a blame thing. And then you have Republicans, like I said, back and forth, you know, blame. And it doesn't just happen just within the United States. It happens universal around everywhere. I mean, you know, I can sit being who would also have been blamed for 2,000 years for consistently blamed for things are the Jews. They've always been the scapegoat for things. Ever since Jesus was put up on the cross, they were blamed for putting him on the cross. Though that somebody else did, the Romans put him on the cross, the Romans crucified him, the Romans implemented their own set of rules and had their own court with Pontus and ordered him to be executed. It comes down to the blame game. And it keeps on going blame on the Jews, for example, like I said. They got blamed for the Black Death, you know, the Black Plague. They got blamed for everything. And then, of course, Hitler blamed them for Germany's situations, and then people blame the Jews for, you know, supposedly the conspiracy of having power. Remember the old theory of the old prodigals of Zion? And it's a system repeats. Because now you have the same thing where, you know, the other day I was watching, with British journalists who are talking about wanting to ostracize and boycott Israel, and here they go again, blame, and they don't call it anti-Semitic, but that's what it is. You know, if you hear the goose step, we all know what that is. They want to blame Israel. Oh, you occupiers, you're the problem. Blame. Blame Israel for being existing. That's a real problem in the Middle East. They use the word Israel, by the way, it's synonymous, but they're really just really saying you blame the Jew. And it's always the same anti-Semitic situation, because it's easy to blame them. You know, watching the situation, I mean, I was on the blog sites for Al Jazeera the other night, and I was real curious because they were talking, had all these people talking about since it's the anniversary of the Six-Day War and what happened after 40 years. You know, Israel that does a preemptive attack against Egypt because why? Egypt threatened to attack Israel and wipe it off the map. They put their forces on, and what did they also do? Which is a blatant military act was they blocked the Straits of Tehran, which is below a lot, which they did basically a naval blockade against Israel. That's a war. I mean, can you imagine if somebody sealed up one of your ports, you would militarily, you know, strike back. And then, of course, Israel was then attacked by Jordan and then by Syria. But it's their fault, you know. And it's their fault for, you know, controlling the West Bank, controlling this. And then it's poor Palestinians who blame them, but they can't take the blame for them their own choices. Oh, that's right. Blame comes out of choices. So, see, blame game, which I'm getting to, is a game. It's like a little kid's game, you know. And like I said, the blaming just continues, and it is a little. It's like a childish game, you know. Like I said, from the Jews being blamed for things, and you got the Americans that are getting blamed for things, you know. Oh, it's all America's fault that around the world there's problems. No, no, no. People around the world have made choices. They need to take responsibility for their own choices and quit blaming everybody else for their own situations. They can make do things and change things. Not strapping on a little kid with a bomb or putting a bunch of terrorists into an airplane and knock out a couple of towers and kill 3,000 people. That's part of their blame game. You can't sit there and blame people for your ills if out of because those ills are out of your choices or circumstances. They need to take responsibility. Look what happened on Iraq, for example. Now, I'm not even going to get into the issue of WMD because that's a whole other thing. You know, that was a lie in getting us in there. But we did, the United States, along with the British, did make a choice, a bad choice. And people stood back, not totally engaged to stop it. So that was our choice, our responsibility. And yet, you know, even when the Saddam Hussein was taken out of power and a regime change, now the Iraqis had their choice, an opportunity to choose and develop an elected government that would secure the interests for their people. But instead, they made the choice of a sectarianism, which would obviously lead to civil war. So it's their choice. So I'm not, you can't sit there and blame the Americans for the situation totally for what's happening in Iraq. Yep, they toppled Hussein and that was bad. But ultimately, people make choices. You know. And they have to take responsibility for their situations. They can't sit there and go back to the blame game. You know, and I can keep on going with this blaming stuff because you can go on, you know, blacks blaming the whites for what happened, you know, up to the 60s, and there's still, like I said, there's still some racist, a lot of racist elements, but there's the blaming, and then the whites, of course, blame everybody else, and like I said before, like the Democrats blame the Republicans blame the Democrats, so-and-so. Hell, there's even conspiracy to blame the Illuminati for the situations around the world. It's always a blame, but ultimately control is an illusion, and ultimately everybody needs to take responsibility for their choices. Everybody. You know, if you succumb to somebody's control, that is your choice. You have only to blame yourself. And that blame is usually resulting from the fact that there is a lack of self-esteem to that individual or individuals or groups of people. You know, one thing I'll tell you, people ask, well, you know, people are victims, you know? No, victims have, there are no victims, there's only volunteers. And there is a fact, it is people who make those choices make them be out of their situations because of their self-worthiness has been diminished. In a classic case, and even though he was I'd say a very much of an evil genius, was Hitler. How did 6 million Jews just walk into the gas chambers and get slaughtered like sheep? Well, he did it methodically. Think about how, if you look at how he did it, then you can see how choices are made equating, and if you put on an equation level, of people making choices and then ultimately to their self-destruction. The Nazis did with the Jews, for example, slowly by slowly diminishing the self-worthiness of the Jews. First they start making them like second class. They keep on coming out, knocking them down. You keep on telling how they're a bunch of little rats. You keep on telling how abhorred they are. Keep on saying those things, and then you slowly create laws, separating them, making them an even smaller group. Then you keep on continuing that, where you lock them into certain areas where they're only allowed to live. Those are called ghettos. And that, of course, been around. The ghetto, by the way, has been meant time for where Jews are only allowed to live. So they put these little places that Jews are only allowed to live, and they keep them, knock them, hitting them on the head, make them wear their little stars of David's or whatever, and hit, make them feel like nothing, so feeling like nothing that they can basically march like sheep. And ultimately, they made their choices to walk into those gas chambers without fighting back because they had no self-worthiness. That's the ultimate classic case. And you can't just blame that situation because it was their responsibility for their own lives what they did. So there are really no victims. There's only volunteers. And then you can go down. It sounds cold, and it sounds like, you know, extreme existentialistical Nitschke, but it is. It's the real. People, we always make our choices. Whatever those choices are, we need to take responsibility for their choices, you know, and learn from them, and you move forward. But you can't go back and blame. You can't go back in your own relationships and say, oh, you know, the reason why I act like this toward my ex-wife or my ex-boyfriend is because the way I was raised when I was a kid, I was beaten up by my alcoholic father, or my mom used to hit me with a switch. That's blaming again. That's still blaming. It's not taking responsibility of your choices. Like I said, we all take our choices, and we can't consistently sit there and blame. Because you know what they say about the blame game? It's the same old game. You know? And this goes everywhere, in every aspect. You know, in Europe or Asia or individually. And I mean, you can look at every aspect of your lives, both politically, spiritually, within your own family units. There's always people blaming. You'll sit at work and people blame their own screw-ups on somebody else without taking responsibility for their own screw-ups. Yep, I did it, so, okay. And they're so scared that they might get fired or something else, they'll blame somebody else. So it's a part of accepting responsibility. I mean, it's sort of funny because I put in a, like I said, in a blog a couple days, couple days ago. In fact, it was on Al Jazeera. It was real interesting going on there and watching. On there, they had this little thing there, people around the world talking about, you know, the situation in the Middle East, and it was about the Six-Day War and all that. And from Afghanistan to UK to Egypt to Israel, America. It was interesting watching all these people, and they're sitting there blaming, you know, saying, hey, it's Palestinians' fault. No, it's the Israelis' fault. It's their fault. Of course, like 90% of it was always Israel's fault because it is on Al Jazeera, you know. But they were always blaming. And then I wrote in there, it says, why is this always the same game, the blame game? You know, it's like the Palestinians, right? Their own situation, for example, which is going to be interesting. By the way, I have a great show coming on next week, just to remind everybody, in 2 weeks, with Marshak McMahon. Of course, we'll talk about elixir of issues regarding the Middle East, because it's going to be interesting, because part of her, she has is a channeler and a psychic and an artist, but she channels with Princess Di and John Lennon, and it's really interesting, deals with the Middle East. Just to throw that in there. But not to get off tangent here, but it's like I was watching it, and it was the same old thing. Poor Palestinians. You know, poor me. All my troubles is because the Israelis have done this. They now have walls up there, and they don't let me in and out of my country. You know, I can't even go anywhere. But why are the walls up? Oh, yeah, there were suicide bombers. Oh, yeah. And we don't have any money, and look how we're living. Yet billions and billions, and this is a fact, billions, not millions, billions was sent from the United States, from Europe, to the Palestinians, to the Palestinian Authority to help start up a new infrastructure. Since in the 1990s, yet all that money went to Arafat's pocket, who happens to be, by the way, before he passed away, was one of the top 10 richest people in the world because of that. Basically stole from his own people. That's the leader. And while his wife and kids lived in Paris, well, he was really nationalistic. I mean, you'd think I'm Palestinian, I'm going to live in my country. Wouldn't you bring your kids and your family over there too? Anyway, but the blame game. So what did they do with that? Took that money, he stole a lot of it. Then he get the keep it going. You know, there's like old magic trick. It keeps somebody, some confrontation going on one side while you're stealing on the other side. And by the way, this is basically also what the Nazis did. They had, you know, the hate game with the Jews, similar with the situation of the Palestinians. You know, get that hate game over on the right side. And meantime, they were stealing left and right. You know, it's sort of like in a same sense, in a different sense, the hate game that goes on in the U.S. or the fear factor, what the Bush administration has done here, is by creating that fear and, you know, blame. And I'm getting off to another topic, but, you know, it's the magic trick, you know, fear of terrorism, fear of this, slowly take away their rights and slowly move and take, you know, basically out of money and power. I mean, you just watch Halliburton, how much money they've made since the Iraq War. In the situation of the energy crisis, since the infamous secret meeting with Cheney and that nobody knows about with Cheney and the energy. But, oh, I'm starting to make a blame thing, too. Because that was our choice to allow that happen. Oh, that's right. So I can't blame either. Because that was our choice to allow it to happen. So getting back to even, like I said, in the Middle East, the poor Palestinians, they basically made their choices. You know, they made their choices. They made their choice when the Israelis withdrew from Gaza, instead of fixing, like they left, greenhouses and infrastructure, some farms. Instead of utilizing all that was left, actually they destroyed it all. They made a choice. So you can't feel sorry for people who make those choices. You can't feel sorry for people who blame for the choices they've made. Because it's a blame game. You know? It's just like, this now you sound even more harsher or colder. But the Native American Indians, they're not victims, they're volunteers. They allowed the white man to take over their country. Whoa, man, look at what they're, poor little Indians, they just got swallowed up. No, if they had made the choice instead of fighting amongst themselves and been united, there was no way in hell the U.S. government, in their tactics, in military tactics, could handle the Native Americans. And a good example of that would be the Red Cloud, who is a Lakota in the north. Near, I believe it was near Powder Creek and near the Dakotas. They call them Lakotas, or also called Sioux Indians, for those who are of the French term for the Lakota. But he had united a group of Native American tribes, and they whipped the U.S. bad, basically, big time, because they were united. I mean, I can sit there, go on and on about all those examples. I mean, when the Romans beat the Jews during the famous Jewish Wars and the Jewish Revolt, the way they beat them, they caused them to divide amongst themselves, basically. Because if they were united, there was no way in hell they would have whipped the Romans out of there. So it's a blame game again. Everybody makes choices. There are really no real victims, you know. And I can go on and on about the same thing about the blame game, and it's always the same. I mean, look at every little instance. And like I said, all that, it's like, what would you tell a little kid? You know, it's the same little kid. You know, it's amazing, because we people who are adults do things in sort of a double standard way. They'll blame, you know, this person and that person, and yet they'll tell their children. And their kids are blaming, you know, Johnny's blaming little Stephen for hitting him because he's teasing him or whatever, or vice versa. You go, guy, kids, little kids, quit blaming each other. You know, you'd sit there and tell your kids. Yet the adults will do exactly the opposite. They themselves. It's like very, you know. So what's the cause of that? Again, like, and everything I've been seeing, not like a broken record, because it really does come down to is the sense of self-worth and self-esteem. And I constantly reiterate self-esteem all the time, self-worthiness, because, you know, I've had people consistently ask, well, what is the root of all the situations? Why do we have this situation? And it basically comes back to self-worth. Every time I come back, it's back to self-worth, self-love, self-esteem. And what is that? That's that vibration, that inner love between yourself toward everything around you. And with that vibration rises up, that changes certain circumstances. You'll start looking at things like racism, for example, so abhorrent, it doesn't even make sense. How can you even comprehend that? Or the blaming situation. And, you know, we're not perfect. I mean, we sense of it. But we need to take responsibility for our own actions. Because part of that is your sense of self-worth. You know, it's finally coming to terms. And I'm not saying beat yourself over the head. Because that's not the point. The point is not to sit there and go, oh my God, look what I've done. Because that's like blaming yourself. Blaming yourself is not taking responsibility. It's a little big difference. Blaming is more like, if you're blaming yourself, it's like putting yourself down, knocking down your own self-worthiness. It's accepting it. It's just, you know, I messed up. Now, what can I do? Well, I'm going to have to accept the responsibility for my choices and what they're going to lead to and learn to grow from that mistake that I just made. Or I wouldn't call it a mistake because it's really not a mistake. Yeah, I guess so. Some situations could be mistakes, but that choice I had made, which led to the circumstance. And not go back to the blame game. You know, it's funny because there's also blaming of the funniest issues which is only sort of mind-boggling when you always think about it logically. It's how like in the United States, where they're, for example, a lady, I remember this a while back, she buys a cup of hot coffee from McDonald's, spills it on her lap, but then sues McDonald's for the hot coffee. So she's like blaming McDonald's for spilling the damn coffee on her lap. Blame again. It's like people who also, it's sort of funny when they, you know, the cases with the cigarette company, we've become a blame society, basically not taking responsibility for our own actions. It's like cigarettes. Nobody twisted your arm to stick that cigarette the first time or the second time or the third time in your mouth to smoke it. Yeah, it's addictive. But hell, how many warnings are you told that this stuff is addictive and bad for you? It's smacked on the label of every damn cigarette box. It's everybody's common knowledge for God 30 years, 40 years now, that the stuff will kill you. But people stick it in their mouth and they make their choice. Yet they'll blame the cigarette companies. They're the ones buying it and sticking it in their mouth and smoking it. Where's the responsibility of that individual? Oh, that's basically it. Like, our society has also become a blame society in a lot of sense, because there's a lack of self-worthiness within our own society, so we blame things on other events, on other people's, or other situations, or other companies. We blame McDonald's for giving us fat, you know, food that's full of trans fats and all that bad stuff. Of course, you know, we didn't all know what the trans fat. Come on. If you go, you know, it's like a fat person, excuse me, I'm using fat, obese or a fat or large person, goes into McDonald's and buys the double whammy burger, whatever, the, you know, whether it's a Big Mac or a three-layered quarter pounder, and then they supersize their French fries with all that fat and oil and starch, and then drink that big old glass, a cup of Coke, which is filled with, everybody knows, I'm not talking Diet Coke, regular Coke or regular soft drinks, filled with all that sugar. And then on top of it, you'll eat some big old dessert that's full of sweet and fat in it. And they're going, God, McDonald's is making me fat. So there's the blame. You're, don't be twisting your arm to stick your coin in their to the cashier to buy that supersized meal. It's, nobody forced you to put that food in your mouth. Yet we'll go back and blame. We'll blame those other things, corporations, other people, other groups of people. We'll blame our government. It's funny how we'll sit there and go sit back and blame our government for everything, yet what are people doing about it? They'll sit back on their high knees and not make, you know, become active about it, not go out there, and whether it's voting or campaigning or writing, or there's a lot of avenues, and you can, non-violent avenues, whether it's protest. I mean, those are choices, even toward the extent, and I'm not advocating, and I repeat, I'm not advocating civil disobedience, but there are choices when those will come into play. Those are choices as well. And those can be, those are created to create some sort of unrest, to whether it's a protest or a sit-down strike or whatever. So you can't sit there and blame the government, blame Bush, because you made the choice. People made the choice. Society made the choice. The government of the United States made their choice too, and you made, allowed them to make that choice. So you can't sit there and blame for your choice what doesn't mean that to other people's choice, because that's part of blaming. It's the same game, the blame game. And it's always the same. So that, I mean, it just, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, and I know it sounds sort of dry, and I'm being very existentialist again, I repeat. Very, sounds sort of cold, but there are no victims. There's only volunteers. And if you look at it on a spiritual sense, that is the way it is. You know, it's like, you know, I tend to believe that we always choose our life paths on the higher realm, and this is on a spiritual basis. And this comes back to, now I'm getting back into spiritual responsibility, because ultimately it's your spirit, your soul, you're taking responsibility for your choices. Whether it's the parents you choose to reincarnate or place your embodiment into, and the life choices you make, and ultimately your choice of life that is made. So you can't really blame. Or the cards that are set in front of you, or the circumstances, you can't just blame. That's not being, taking responsibility. You need to sit back, and people need to take responsibility. And if they did, their vibrational self-worthiness would grow. And it's funny, because I remember I had a while back, I dealt with integrity, and I remember I had, I had spoken about, somebody asked me, I'm trying to remember, but what could be done to change the circumstances? And there are situations that can change and increase people's vibrational self-worthiness. I mean, not to throw out her name, for example, or what her said, and I haven't really gotten into what the aspects, but there are examples of, like, she has a show, I think, on here called Spiritual Hollywood, Kate Romero, and I believe she has a thing for dealing with helping people with self-worthiness. And there's other, I mean, you can go down the line a whole bunch of avenues where there are spiritually peaceful, who are, I would say, more of the enlightened people on the running, or working within the light in a positive manner to develop people's self-worthiness. You know, it's not simply going, oh, I love Jesus, or I love God, or that's not, I'm talking about true sense of self-worthiness to enlighten somebody's, not just the reflecting themselves or their outer spirit, reflecting their own self-awareness, not in a narcissistic way, not a, like I said, like a Paris Hilton type of situation, but a true sense of self-worth where they can take responsibility and do things in a positive element, both for themselves as well as around their immediate surroundings. You know, so it's like a development of self-worth. And it keeps on going back and forth. I can go on in a cycle. And you'll notice I go back within this, these same cycles of self-worthiness and self-worth. You know, it all comes back to that. So we can sit there all day and blame everybody else for our own choices, or we can make a new choice starting today, try not to blame. And try to accept responsibility for your choices. Go, you know, and not in the sense like hitting yourself over the head, because that's like blaming yourself, accepting the responsibility, embracing, say, hey, you know what, I did it. Now it's time to move forward. Because once you do that and change your mindset on that, your vibrational sense will change almost an immediate, because now you'll learn to grow and move forward and not have to keep establishing the same old, you know, circle, basically the merry-go-round of, you know, of the blame game. Because that's basically what it is. It's like a merry-go-round. You blame them, they blame you. You blame everybody else, they blame you too. Never taking, you know, embracing your own choices. Because your choices are you. You know, when you pass away or die or whatever you want to call it, when you go into a new embodiment, you don't take your cars with you, you don't take your money with you. The only thing you take is your experiences along with your nefesh, your guts go into the ground or wherever, or burnt if you're, you know, decide to, you know, have your remains burnt or whatever, or thrown in the sea. But all you ever really take with you, with your soul, is your experiences, and those part of those experiences are part of your choices. So you have to quit again. No, stop the blame game. And this blame, now you'll see people around. You'll go, oh my God, look all around the stuff around you. You can turn on the TV, watch the news, and you go from even Fox News to MSNBC, and you watch the blame game. You can see every little thing. You can even watch shows and see all the blaming goes back and forth in different situations. Because like almost like integrated, thrown into our society. Because people haven't been able to grow past that or move forward from that. It's not easy. It's the easiest thing to do is the blame. You know, it's like the immature action. It's not the growing. When I say immature, you know, a child hasn't grown. When you're supposed to be mature, you've grown. It'd be like the immature concept, the blame game. So I can, you know, reiterate over and over and over again about the blame game. And it's always the same game. So let's not play the game. You know? And I could go on and on about this. You know, from politics to religion and every aspect, you know, there's some sort of blaming, you know. And it's also part of a guilt factor in some sense, too. But that goes into a whole nother situation. So, anyway, enough of the game and the blame and the game. But for all those who want to check who I am and what I am, you can always go to my website, www.andrewfetter.com. And I'm also the author of When the Angels Have Risen. And you can, on that site as well, you'll see my book, and it talks about that and some of the issues that I've sort of basically talked about. Of course, there's an alien factor within that, my book, and I have a new one coming out, which I'm all excited about. It's basically a sequel. It's called The Heretic. It's coming, should be coming out toward the end of this year, hopefully sooner. And I'm also, just to reiterate, I want to say, first of all, I want to thank my prior guests from last, my week, my show 2 weeks ago on the 25th, Martin. Martin Lewis, who has his blogger site, myufo.com. You guys all checked out. I had a great interview 2 weeks ago on the 25th. That was really great. And he has a fascinating blog site, which, like I said, is unique. And I'm really happy. It's going to be really interesting because I really look forward to my next interview, which is in 2 weeks on the 22nd. As everybody knows, I'm on every other Friday. How much can you? Because I don't want to get into the blame game every day of the same name. But anyway, in 2 weeks, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I have Marsha McMahon, who also was actually, by the way, another host. And actually, ironic, she had interviewed me. She has a show called The Peaceful Planet. She is a psychic, an artist, and she channels with Princess Diane, and she has a book called With Love from Diane, Queen of Hearts, Message from Heaven for a New Age of Peace. And I'm really looking forward to that because besides talking about, we had a little mixture of talking about elixir of politics and religion. It's, well, politics basically of the Middle East. But I look forward to that because that would be very interesting because I don't want to just talk about obviously the Middle East stuff because we have the same aim of hopefully bringing us into a, instead of the prison planet, into a peaceful planet. But other issues I want to talk about specifically, like maybe about her artistical drawings, which are very unique, and as well as other situations for channeling and aspects around the world from the spirit side, whether it's from, she also is connected with John Lennon and Mother Teresa, which is very interesting, and see how she relates to all that and what her religious thing. So I'm looking really, really forward to that. And then I'm going to have next month, which I'm looking forward to, I'm going to be having a guest who is an astrologist. Her name is Carrie Dale, and she is an astrologist, and she's going to be fascinating, where she's going to present an astrology chart, natal chart, of the presidential candidates. Well, three of three, can't do them all. God, I don't have that much time on this show. But she'll be presenting that, like they'll have Clinton and McCain and Obama and Edwards and Rudy Giuliani and Fred Thompson. I think six. Hopefully that'll be quite fascinating as well. So I'm really looking really, really forward to that as well. And then I have in the next month, in the month of August, I'm having another guest. And I'm waiting for her. She's supposed to be sending me her book and her relationship to her. In her book, talks about after her daughter had passed away, and the spiritual side and the connectedness within that sounds fascinating. It's a little bit more in depth in that sense. But I want to recap again, and also want to thank everybody who are listening now and will be listening in the future. Enough with the blaming. Enough to blame. Don't blame the Jew, the Christian, the Muslim. Don't blame the Buddhist, the Hindu, the atheist. Don't blame the liberal. Don't blame the neocon. Don't blame the Republican. Don't blame the Democrat. Enough of the blaming and take responsibility for your own choices. And, I think if we stop the blame game, it'll change the game to a new game. Maybe a game of, hey, let's get better. Let's heal one another, heal ourselves, develop our self-esteem. It's called a new game, a spiritual enlightening game. I like that game a lot better than the blame game. It's less drama or BS drama. And develop our self-worth. I mean, that would really change the vibration. I talked with somebody, and we were talking about the sense of vibration of the planet. It's the vibration of everybody's soul. vibrated to a more enlightened space, and as it does, it actually changes our universe into a more positive effect, which is true. I mean, simple quantum physics, because thoughts are things. Oh, I didn't mention that. That would be another show I'm going to talk about one day. I was going to do it in this show, but that's a whole different subject. But just reiterate that thoughts are things. So when you think about blaming that, close anyway. I was told I can continue on a little bit because I know I was getting close there. You should have a little red light comes on. Bing, bing, bing. You're ready to close out. But I think if we had raised our vibrational patterns up, and we have a self-esteem that develops, which basically increases your photon levels, your enlightened levels, because thoughts are things, your soul is basically energy as well. As you know, when you pass, there's some 21 grams that disappear of energy. And that form of energy is, and I'm talking to more of a finite pattern, which is really not finite, because in the reality, it's more of an infinite level. Because you can't really measure it if you get, and I'm getting here quantum-like. But an approximately level, because that's what it really is, to approximate, to put a logarithm of our energy, our vibrational patterns. If we change that into a positive and higher standard and develop our self-esteem, things change. You'll know little things. Thoughts are things. And I will get into that, like I said, in another show. But again, I just want to close and reiterate and re-same and rehash, because it's really very important that we stop the blame game. And if you tell other people, whether it's like Middle East politics, and say, hey, why blame the Israelis and don't blame the Palestinians? Sit down and hash out and make peace. Because they're only choices. And by the way, this is just my own little, I don't know, call it prophecy or what I see, just for everybody out there in internet land. This is what I predict will happen in far as the Israeli-Arab situation. There's going to be peace. I hate to tell everybody this. Well, I don't hate, but this is the way it is. There's not going to be a Palestinian state. That was a choice. Choices of the people who live there, especially the Palestinians. They made the choice of not engaging in creating a peace. And partially also the Israelis, but there's a lot to do with more. So I'm not going into the blame because now I'm blaming. But what I truly think what's going to happen is moving toward where there will be actually a joint control of the Jordanians and Israelis, and it's already happening right now, of the West Bank. And you'll see peace, ultimate peace in that situation. You'll see Gaza being given back. Ultimately, well, they tried to give it back to Egypt. The Egyptians are going to take responsibility and take control of Gaza, like I said, and the Israelis and Jordanians will mutually control the West Bank areas. They're already establishing railroad lines to do it. And, holy behold, Syria is going to come in the picture, and Israel, and the Syrians are going to have some kind of compromise situation where there will be peace. It's going to be real strange because people are so used to war and fighting. But I really believe that there will be eventual peace in the Middle East. In our lifetime there, contrary to what everybody says, hell, there is how many hundreds of years of wars in Europe. But that's just my little future thing. And I'm going to start closing again, because I was allowed to go a few minutes overtime here. But I want to wish everybody the best. I want to thank everybody for listening. And again, enough with the blame game. And to you all out there on internet land, God bless you all. And goodbye.